Hey everybody, welcome to the Silver Screen Happy Hour with the Wiegand Brothers. I'm Chris Wiegand. This is the show where my brother Jerome and I discuss two movies, something old and something new, and we enjoy a drink that pairs well with those films. So grab a beverage and join us for this episode of the Silver Screen Happy Hour. We are calling today's show Minari Coast, because we're going to be discussing Minari from 2020 and Mosquito Coast from 1986. As always, we encourage you to watch both movies before listening to the show, or at the very least, watch the trailers on YouTube. So every time my brother and I record an episode, he's on the West Coast, I'm in Michigan, we load up a Zoom video, and then we have another piece of software that we use that's a little bit better quality than the Zoom audio, and we start recording on that. This week was a little different. We started recording and fumbled around with Zoom for a solid 20-25 minutes. It was driving me nuts. Now, we did decide a long time ago that this is going to be an audio podcast, not a video podcast. We do the video just to make the conversation a little easier for us so we can actually see each other, but we do not record the actual video. I decided to leave the last few seconds of our frustration because Jerome just decided he couldn't wait any longer, and he pops his beer, and we're going to pick it up with Jerome's frustration, and then we're just going to launch right in. So let me go ahead and get the film reel set up, and we'll pick it up where Jerome loses his cool.
I can't wait any longer.
I don't know if I'm going to put any of the frustration in for our listeners, but we've just been spending how long? 20 minutes trying to get our Zoom to work, but the audio works, so we're going to run with this. So, Jerome, what movies are we discussing today?
Today is Oscar nominated.
Get closer to the microphone. There you go.
Well, I'm much closer than 6 inches.
Okay.
I'm Joe Biden-ing this microphone right now. That was uncalled for.
All right. You just offended half of our audience. Actually, they're not offended. They understand.
You'll have to edit that out. All right. So today we are reviewing The Mosquito Coast from 1986, Harrison Ford, a Peter Weir directed film, and pairing it with Minari, which was 2020, up for Best Picture, won Best Supporting Actress. Mm-hmm. And we picked these two because they have very, very similar story structures as far as the father and man of the house, so to speak, deciding to uproot his family and follow a dream or a passion. And things go horribly wrong for both, as things do in life.
Ironically, they're both set in roughly the same time period.
Yes, mid-80s. Things go terribly wrong as they do. But interestingly enough, as we'll talk about, I feel like only one of the patriarchs of these two films actually learns their lesson.
Yeah, I thought about that today. I actually saw The Mosquito Coast for the first time a couple of weeks ago when we first started talking about doing this pair up. And then I watched Minari today. My family saw it a few weeks back or whenever, a couple of months ago, I think, when it was up for an Oscar or Oscars. And I had to work and I couldn't stay up late, so I got to watch it today. So what are you drinking to pair up with these movies? Because I made a note that Minari, there's kind of a a Mountain Dew roll, and I don't have any Mountain Dew in my house. And then I said, well, water plays a role. I could just drink water. Well, that's boring. So I'm kind of embarrassed, but it is what it is. I dug around my refrigerator. I found Seagram's Seascapes Calaspa Colada pineapple coconut flavors. So, hey, you're on video. I can see you.
You see me now.
Yeah, look at that trash I'm about to start drinking.
So, what the hell is that?
We can thank my daughter-in-law.
Which interesting.
Oh, that was not even much of a fizz. That was horrible. So, right out of the bottle.
I also struggled to find a drink that would go with either of these two films. So... let me preface this by saying I don't feel this way. I enjoy light beer, but other people consider light beer to be contaminated water. And since contaminated water seemed to be a theme in both films, I'm drinking light beer as my nod to contaminated water.
That's a good one.
I don't feel that way personally. I enjoy light beer, so Mick Ultra, please do not sue me.
As a fan of craft beer, I appreciate the gesture.
Yes, yes. And there are a lot of craft beer drinkers who are so above and so egotistically higher than all of us lowly light beer drinkers.
Anyway, let's get back to the
yes. So which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with Mosquito Coast or Minari?
Let's start with the old one first.
Okay. So a couple of things to note that this is considered by many in the industry Harrison Ford's finest performance. I think Witness is up there. Ironically, there's a lot of similarities between this film and Witness, same director, a lot of the same principles as far as original score. I think editing, cinematography, all might be the same people. So it has that same feel. You can tell when the movie starts, it has the same feel of Witness. Witness is also a similar theme. Peter Weir's kind of running theme that he has through his films is alienation, you know. So, you know, kind of a man outside of where did I write that down? Cultural alienation. That's what I wrote down. So that's kind of like a running theme for Peter Weir. And then and Witness is kind of the same thing, you know, stranger in a strange land, fish out of water sort of thing, where Harrison Ford's character has to go live with the Amish. And Mosquito Coast came out a year later with same actor, Harrison Ford. But again, there's two aspects to this. One, it's considered his best performance. Two, it's also his most unlikable. And he has often said, I want to say that he has considered the Mosquito Coast his favorite role as far as, you know, his own acting, as far as it's the role he's most proud of. Now, he's obviously been on record as saying Indiana Jones is technically his favorite role. You know, that's the one he loves to do over and over. Han Solo is a role he actually hated and wanted to be killed off several times. But the Mosquito Coast, Ali Fox, is one that he is the most proud of as far as his performance. But definitely unlikable. There's not a lot of redeeming qualities about Ali Fox outside of he's really intelligent. You would figure almost a photographic memory, very hands-on, can build anything. Like, those are the most admirable qualities are his abilities. Mm-hmm. But as far as personality and likability, he's zero. I mean, maybe once or twice he's got like a nice moment with River Phoenix, you know, but other than that, the rest of the time he is just completely dragging his family almost literally through the mud. And it's amazing how long they stay with him. I don't want to jump ship and go right to Minari, but one of the similarities is the wife in Minari. I believe her character's name is Monica. She is the exact opposite of Mother, who is Helen Mirren's character as Harrison Ford's wife in Mosquito Coast. Mother goes along with everything he says. You know, he's in charge, whatever he says, that's what we're going to do. Monica in Minari, she challenges her husband on the daily. Anything he wants to do, she is just a stick in the mud on everything. She doesn't want to do any of it. And she lets him know. She doesn't hide her feelings. She is very, very upset. In fact, at one point even drops an ultimatum. I'll only stay here if you let my mother come and stay with me. So, which, by the way, best supporting actress winner.
I mean, what a great role that was.
Kind of steals the show. But anyway, so getting back to Mosquito Coast, I found a lot of religious undertones. I thought there was a lot of Peter Weir talking about God.
Yeah.
In a way, I mean, you could say, yes, the missionary scenes, but even beyond the missionary scenes, you know, there's one line that I thought was very particular when he's arguing with the missionary guy. And he says, you know, if your God knew about this place, he would have done something for these people.
Right.
But interestingly enough, there he stands. So isn't him being there God's answer, God's response? You know, he is doing something for these people. He sent them you. But he fails to see that. Because, you know, nobody can disagree with him. And now, I know we talk often when we do these about the screenwriter's theme, right? What is the spiritual theme that he's supposed to learn? What is the lesson he's supposed to learn? And early on, when he made the little ice box for that guy, Bolsky or Polsky, the guy says, yeah, you know, I hired you for your intelligence, but I also hired you to listen. You know, and that's sort of setting it up. Will he ever take anyone else's advice? Will he ever listen to anyone other than himself? And it's a question that keeps coming up throughout the entire film. And he never learns his lesson from. And again, we've often agreed we won't ruin the ending of the new movie, but we do discuss the endings of the old movie, because if you haven't seen Mosquito Coast by now, 1986, nothing I can do for you, kid. So
I forgot. I was going to note there's actually a TV series coming out in 2021. It might already be out called The Mosquito Coast, but it has nothing to do with the original movie, right?
That's not true. It's actually based on the same book.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Justin Theroux, the actor, is playing Ali Fox.
Okay. I watched the trailer and I didn't get that it was even based.
It looked way off.
Yeah, it seems very different.
It looks like they adapted it to where, again, I haven't seen it, I only saw the trailer, but it looks like they're not escaping to this foreign land because that's what he wants to do. He wants to shed America. It looks like they're on the run, like they're wanted from the authorities. So it looks like that they're forced to leave. But no, he actually met, Justin Theroux had met with Harrison Ford while they were filming.
Okay, cool.
Nothing to do with the Mosquito Coast as far as, hey, I want to talk to you about the character. But apparently they were shooting in Mexico City and Harrison Ford happened to be there. And the producer or his agent, Justin Theroux's agent or somebody, knew that and knows both actors and called up Harrison Ford and said, you want to meet for lunch with Justin Theroux? And they met and he said they talked for hours and only a little bit of it was about Mosquito Coast. They talked about everything else. But it did come up that they were there shooting the show based on the book. And Harrison Ford loved it. He loved the idea. And again, that's where he relayed how much he loved playing the character.
Yeah. So my take on the movie, and actually in his performance, I think you're right. I think his performance is probably one of the best I've ever seen from Harrison Ford. But it was weird because when I first started watching it, I'm like, wow, this guy's, he's either crazy, I mean, or he's a genius or both. You know, a lot of geniuses are a little crazy. But there's like, I couldn't relate to actually in both movies, because neither of the husbands like wanted to, they were strong-willed and bullheaded, and they had their ideas about the way they were going to do life, and it's like they didn't even take into consideration their wife's point of view, you know what I mean? And and so it's like, we talked about this before, I think in the last one we did, about Children of a Lesser God, because that was set in the 80s, and he very kind of a chauvinistic reaction in that movie between the male and female leads. And I had a similar reaction. I was like, man, I just can't wrap my brain around this, because I'm like, especially Minari, and we'll get to that in a minute, but his wife was like super strong and insightful. And I'm like, dude, you're a fool if you don't listen to this woman. You know what I mean? Because like, if you want your world to go well, you listen to, you know, you're blessed to have a woman like that by your side, you know?
Yeah.
And he just, and he wasn't listening. He wasn't hearing it. And until, well, won't say any more because like we don't want to give it away. But yeah, when I was watching Mosquito Coast, I'm like, wow, I like, and not just with his family and his wife, but the way he referred to the people that lived like in the jungle, like the
savages.
I'm like, wow, that's a very dated term. You don't use that in 2021 about, you know, folks in Central America, right? It's like, oh my gosh.
Savages.
I was like, yeah, it was just, it really struck me as like, I cringed. I was like, uh oh, here comes the white savior, you know, coming to Central America to tame the savage beasts. It's like, oh God, that's horrible to even hear. And, you know, so anyways, I took note of that.
And as far as the structure that we often talk about, you know, the theme is posed, or the question, the central question of the film would be posed to the main, you know, character in the first 5-10 minutes, whatever it is. And then they spend the rest of the movie trying to figure out if they're going to answer the question. We always talk about the midpoint scene, right? The midpoint scene is where they achieve their tangible goal, what they want. And then the second half, everything goes to shit. This film almost follows that to a T, because at the exact midpoint, there's a shot of their civilization that he built.
Yeah.
Success. The ice machine is built. There's all the lawn. There's like lawn now. There was like grass and it's like finally cut. And it's like there's huts that have air conditioning. Like the utopia had been set. The very next scene, and I mean the very next scene, they show a very disgruntled Harrison Ford, and River Phoenix's voiceover was he had accomplished what he wanted, but now he was getting restless.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, boom, we're automatically now in act two, or not act two, the second half of act two. We're now in the second half of the movie where things are about to go to shit. And what does he do? He goes and tries to take ice up to the Indians, and sees, you know, meets the three gunmen, the three armed, you know. So, and that's, and that, it's almost exactly, if he would just stayed there, he would have stayed in his utopia forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he had to go meddle.
Yeah.
He had to go, you know, try to save the world. And I want to say that Hattie, I think that's the character's name. Hattie was the guy that stayed with them and worked with them. Mm-hmm. He was his main worker. You know, try to tell him, don't go up there. They don't want to do anything with what you're doing. And again, he doesn't listen. He didn't learn his lesson in the beginning. He didn't learn his lesson halfway through.
Right.
He didn't learn his lesson at all.
Yeah. And that was another thing. When he showed up, he just like starts ordering these people around and they're doing what he says. I'm like, this. So there was a disconnect in the storytelling for me in that I was like, well, okay. I mean, it's a movie.
You know. There is one funny part when he first gets there and he's got everything, you know, the first day or two, everybody's in culture shock. Whoa, what is this guy doing? He's immediately plowing stuff over or whatever. And then he has the next scene where he's got them all lined up and he says, okay, you know, I'm a man who, you know, can take advice. He's not. He's full of shit. He's lying through his teeth. But he says, I'll let you guys decide what comes first, because we all have to do this stuff first. And then he looks at a guy who doesn't speak any English and he goes, planting. That's what we want to do. Planting. OK, so you called it planting. We're going to do planting. And they start planting. And it's like, nobody really said that. You said it. But he has this facade that he's taking advice from people, but he's not.
Our delusion.
Yeah, the delusion of this is a democracy. No, it wasn't. It was never a democracy. So, but anyway, there's a lot of, again, where I feel like God is giving Ali signs and he's ignoring them, you know, and in fact, not only is he ignoring them, but he manifests the ignorance into rage against the missionary, against the reverend and his missionary. And again, you could talk about biblical undertones all you want. When he sets fire to the church at the end, he immediately gets shot for it.
By the reverend.
So you could sit there and you could say, well, Peter Weir set the movie up to where Ali is the hero and the reverend is the antagonist. The reverend is the bad guy. The reverend could be the hand of God trying to reach him, trying to get him to see the light. And when he refuses and in fact then sets fire to the church, the hand of God comes down and shoots Ali. So, you know, there's, you know, what I find is –
you got to look, you don't have to look any farther than the screenplay. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, Peter Weir directed it, but it's Paul Schrader's screenplay. Paul Schrader, for anyone that's listening and doesn't know, he has a history of writing characters like this. He wrote Taxi Driver. He wrote Raging Bull. You know, he wrote Affliction, which is probably my favorite Nick Nolte movie, where he writes these films where these lead characters, they don't want to listen to anybody else. They feel like they have a mission and a passion, and anyone who gets in my way, they're going to get hurt. And this is what I want, and this is what I need, and I don't listen to anybody else. And every single one of them suffers some sort of downfall. You know, very few times do they learn their lesson. And that's Paul Schrader's sort of like maybe thumbing his nose at you know, proper screenwriting, if you want to call it that. For anyone that can't see me, I did the air quotes, you know, yeah. Proper screenwriting where the hero is always supposed to learn their lesson. Well, Paul Schrader's like, no, my heroes don't have to learn their lesson.
Well, I mean, throughout history, there's been comedies, there's been tragedies, right?
Right. And Live by the Sword.
He writes tragedies.
Live by the Sword, Die by the Sword.
That movie definitely, it was tragic.
And Ali Fox is, you see that same character manifested in Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, Wade Whitehouse in Affliction, Jake LaMotta in Raging Bull. They're all the same mentality. They're all the same guy. What I say goes, you're either with me or you're without me, or, you know, or get out of my way. And none of them actually, I would say, oddly enough, Travis Bickle, who's probably the most psychotic of the four I just mentioned, might be the only one that learns any sort of a lesson at the end.
Right.
The rest of them never seem to learn that their destructive behavior is what pushed everybody in their lives away from them. And Ali Fox is another perfect example of that. So you need to look no further than the screenplay. Another theme I thought was interesting throughout the film was the pollution of paradise, is what I called it. Mm-hmm. He mentions, you know, after the explosion, right, he has to figure out a way to get rid of the three armed gun, you know, the three gunmen. And he finds a rather grotesque way to get rid of them.
Right.
And when it all goes to shit, somehow he didn't think about getting their guns from them before he locked them into the goddamn icebox. But they try to shoot their way out. Of course, the whole thing explodes. The icebox destroyed. The whole civilization utopia he built is now in shambles.
Right.
Hattie's boat gets destroyed.
Yeah. And the river's contaminated.
What I was going to say was, yeah, is that, you know, his boat's destroyed, and Harrison Ford's character, Ali, says, what do you need a boat without a river? And he says, the river's still here. And he says, no, it's contaminated now. We live here, we stay here, we die. So every place he goes, he's contaminating,
right,
the paradise of that had existed, which is ironic.
Yeah.
Because that's why he left America.
Right. He's made it worse.
Right. That's why he left America, though.
Yeah.
Because he thought America was this great place and he couldn't bear to see it fall. He has a great story about his mother who was dying on her deathbed. He's a great analogy there where he just left her there. Mm-hmm. And all his family told him he was cold and heartless. And he said, no, I just couldn't. I loved her so much that I couldn't bear to sit there and watch her die. It was the same, his feelings about America. He loved America so much that he couldn't bear to see it fall apart. So he left. But ironically, he did to all these great little natural paradises what he felt America was happening, which was contamination, pollution of paradise.
Yeah.
So
it was nominated for what, one or two Golden Globes?
Yeah, it was not a big Oscar draw.
No, it wasn't.
Because he was so unlikable. And because of the movie didn't make that much money. It was considered a bomb.
Really? Okay. River Phoenix, he won something. It was like a lower kind of...
Well, that was a time where I think River Phoenix might have been winning every young actor award that they were giving out.
So it was like a young actor award.
Whether it was the People's Choice Awards or the Blockbuster Entertainment Awards or whatever, River Phoenix probably had a hell of a mantle.
Right.
You know, it really is unfortunate his passing was so early.
Yeah.
He was, you know, I always considered Heath Ledger. When Heath Ledger was alive, I remember telling somebody Heath Ledger is who River Phoenix would have been had he lived. Mm-hmm. And then what happens to Heath Ledger? So, you know, it's really a bummer to try to find, you know, the next young thing that's that talented at such a young age. River Phoenix impressed Harrison Ford so much that when they went to go do Indiana Jones 3,
right,
he he handpicked River Phoenix to play him as a younger Indiana Jones in all the flashback scenes.
Yeah, what a compliment there.
Yeah, yeah. So, egotistic and narcissist are words that are thrown around with Ali Fox. Do they also work for Jacob and Minari? Do you consider Jacob? Now we're doing a transition here to Minari.
Yeah.
Do you feel that Jacob is also an egotist and a narcissist?
I don't see that character in that same light. I see his character's name is Jacob. Yes. I see Jacob I think there's some ego there. He kept talking about how he didn't want to just stare into chicks' butts all the rest of his life. I can't remember how he said it. Remember, because that's what he was a sex. What was it? What do they call him? A sex. They figured out what sex the chicks were. These chickens.
Oh, right? the chickens, right?
Yeah, and he's like, I don't want to stare at chickens'
asses. But he was really good at it. He was really the best.
Yeah, he was quick. But he hated it. He hated his job. He hated. You know, he didn't want to spend the rest of his life looking at, you know, chicks' asses.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily, to me, make him a monster. He had ambitions. He wanted to be successful in life, you know. But it was at the expense. I mean, he wasn't really taking anyone else's advice. He wouldn't. There you go. He wouldn't. You know, he wouldn't even the new neighbors. When they greeted him, they tried to help him out, trying to, you know,
how to find the water. Now,
yeah.
The reason why that's important is I always felt that his theme was very similar to Ali's as far as will he ever listen or take advice to other people.
Right.
You can actually get it a little bit more specific. Will he assimilate to his new culture?
Mm-hmm.
Will he assimilate to a new world, so to speak? And he doesn't. He rejects it at first. They show him this is how you do the water witching. After they leave, he tells his son, we don't need that medieval crap. Like, we don't need that. But what happens near, you know, again, not to ruin too much, but at one point he just succumbs to it and says, okay, we got to do it this way. So at least he starts learning his lesson near the end as far as how to assimilate properly, how to listen and take advice from other people. The mother character and his wife's character, Monica, are two major influences in him learning this lesson. It's actually a more finer tuned screenplay, excuse me, than the Mosquito Coast as far as that tug of war we always talk about, that push and pull of one scene he's not learning his lesson, the next scene he is learning his lesson. You know, again, we already talked about Paul Schrader's scripts. They don't do any of that. They're not about that. You know, he's very, very hard-nosed about, no, this is my guy, and my guy isn't supposed to learn his lesson. It's about how they're destructive they are. And, you know, and Minari tries to go for a little bit more of sort of a happy ending where, no, the lead kind of has to learn his lesson at some point.
Yeah, that tug of war was definitely there, though. So, like, he and how would you name what the tug of war was? So I see it as accepting help in the new culture or assimilating. You use the word assimilation, assimilating to the new culture, and then trying to hang on to the past in a way, or just relying totally on his Korean, you know, Korean American.
Exactly.
You know,
I know how to do it better. Yeah. You don't have to tell me the American way. I'm going to do it the Korean way. Well, you're living in Arkansas, man. I don't know if the Korean way is going to work, you know?
Yeah. So. And even when, his plan was to sell the crops to Korean Americans, you know, and break into that network. And then that let him down. Because they, you know, they decided to go with the farmers in California instead.
Right. You know, right. Like, so,
yeah, it was. But I felt like the character development was better in this movie with his what was the one crazy neighbor, the religious guy, Will Patton played him. Paul.
Tell me Paul is not Hattie from Mosquito Coast.
Yeah, right, right. They, yeah, he's the local guy, and he's right. The one that befriends him. Right,
you're the
right.
Handyman that will yep. do, you know, that does what he's told to do, and he's the hard worker, and he does, you know, is it? Yeah. It's so funny when I was rewatching Mosquito Coast again. You know, I've seen this movie when I was 11 when it came out, but you know, when we prepare for a week like this, do the show, I have to go back and rewatch it, and there were so many things I had forgotten about. But when I was, I had already seen Minari, of course, because it was up for Best Picture. So when I was watching this again and I was rewatching Hattie, I remember thinking, that's Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, this
yeah.
guy's doing everything but carrying a cross down the street, you know?
Yeah. So. And it was funny because the religious, theme, almost a subplot, right? In Minari too, where there's, you know, he's in a very religious culture. It's they're Christian too, but it's a very different Christianity than they're used to.
Yes.
To say the least.
Yeah.
In Arkansas. So,
I mean, one of my favorite shots of the whole movie is when they're driving down the street and they see Paul carrying his cross. Right. They stop to talk to him. But while Jacob is talking to Paul, the camera shows the mom in the back seat is just like, right. Like you can't, like, for those that can't see me on the video, her mouth is open, like just like completely agape, like just like in shock of what she's watching. Yeah. And they don't mention it. He never says anything to her.
Right.
But she's just in the back window with her mouth open, just staring at this guy carrying a cross.
The only explanation he gave is like, oh, this is my church. This is what I do on Sunday, basically.
Yeah, I do this every week. I do this every Sunday.
But God love Jacob. He's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Waves, you know, good luck or whatever. I forgot what he said to him.
You need a lift? No? Yeah. Okay. All right. You know?
But that was good character development because it showed me, he is developing a relationship with this guy, even though he's very different and off a little bit, you know, it seemed
Which is different from Allie, because Allie wouldn't have formed a partnership. He's more the boss. He would have told Hattie, don't do this, don't do that. In fact, Hattie does come to him near the end of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And says, hey, I brought you supplies. And he said, we don't need them. Right. Don't need them. You know, you're on my land now. And Hattie's like thrown off. Like, what the hell, man? I've been your buddy for so long. Yeah. And at that point, he realizes, I guess I was never your buddy. I was always your subordinate.
Yeah. And that's
here
the,
I am
and that's the big difference in these two movies.
Yes.
Harrison Ford's character nothing ever penetrates his thick skull.
Right. Exactly.
to his detriment.
Yes. And oddly enough, the downfall of both in the second half of the film are their own doings. Now, you could argue that, well, what was Allie Fox supposed to do? These three gunmen show up. Well, first of all, he went and tempted those three gunmen, right? If he would have just stayed where he was, nobody would have known he was there. Second of all, so he's somewhat responsible for them even knowing that he was there. So second of all, yes, he does find a way to save his family and get rid of the three gunmen, and that's what causes the complete destruction. In Minari, it starts to go bad when he realizes he was wrong on how to retrieve the right water. So he taps into the county line's water, right? Shuts off the water at his own house, and then lies to his family. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. This is the water. We have a water problem. Like, no, you know exactly what you're doing. You care more about your crops at this point than you do feeding water into the house. So they both lead their actions based on their passions is what leads to both downfalls.
Yeah.
The difference is Jacob and Minari, again, he learns his lessons. He learns what he should and shouldn't do. He takes advice from people. He accepts. And that's what I talked about when I was talking to your daughter, Caitlin, over Facebook about Minari. One of the things I loved about Steven Yeun's performance is that you see it on his face. You know, in every scene, without him even saying a word, and Harrison Ford has this too, but in a different way, You can see it on his face without saying a word. He knows when he's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he knows when the decisions he made is causing harm to others.
Right.
You can see it. Harrison Ford, same but different. You see it on his face that nobody seems to be listening to me.
Right.
Why is everybody else crazy and I'm the only genius around here? Right. Like that, you see that on his face. And I agree with some of the critics that say it's his best performance. Because as much as I loved Harrison Ford in movies like Witness and The Fugitive, which I always think those are his three best performances, Witness, The Fugitive, and Mosquito Coast. I'm not including Indiana Jones and Han Solo. Those are fun action films. But as far as straight dramas,
yeah,
Witness, Mosquito Coast, and The Fugitive, I think, are his three best performances that, you know, were Oscar worthy, so to speak. This is the one where he does so much without saying something.
Yeah.
He just has some of those reactions and some of those shots where he's just like, and he even looks around like, am I the only genius here? What the hell's the matter with you people? Why is nobody listening to me? And he plays it to perfection.
Yeah.
And you get more and more frustrated every time you see that face of his, because you get angrier.
Right.
You're like, man, would you just stop and listen? Whereas when you watch Minari and you see Steven Yeun's reactions, you say, he understands. He's getting it.
Yeah.
He's getting it. It's harder, but he's getting it.
Yeah, and what was it? Mother in Helen Mirren. Her role. There comes a point where towards the end of the movie, she realizes he's not playing with a full deck anymore. Like something snapped, or he's not.
But it comes way too late.
It does. It comes way too late. And by then, you're like, you got this sick feeling like, oh, this ain't going to end well.
No. Yeah. I mean, he emerges from the water. When she has her breakdown, she thinks he's been lost in the sea.
Yeah.
Because he went underwater to retrieve the propeller. When he comes up, he feels that everyone's being a traitor now. And he punishes his sons by sticking them in a dinghy and making them follow behind him in the boat. Like that's his punishment, you know. That's their punishment. So by way, again, this is another major point. River Phoenix's character Charlie was always on his side. His words did not match his actions. Mm-hmm. So in the voiceover, in the narration, he would say, my dad's losing it. He's crazy. He's, you know, he's doing all these things. He's alienating everybody. But on screen, the character of Charlie is doing whatever his father tells him to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's helping him out. He's doing whatever he is. He argues with people and tells them, no, my dad's a genius. My dad built an icebox. You know, my dad can do this. My dad can do that. It's that scene that Charlie's relationship with Allie is fractured.
Right.
You know, he's punishing me for having these thoughts. He's punishing me for wanting to help the family.
Yeah.
And it's at that moment that when they find the missionary, he's off to find Martha Plimpton to say, we need your help. We want to escape. We want to escape my dad. Oddly enough, Martha Plimpton and River Phoenix met on that. I want to say they met on that set, or they might have met earlier, but by working together, they started dating for 3 years after that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. There were a couple.
Wow, interesting.
And Helen Mirren, since you brought her up, you know, this was only her second film. I want to say it was her second film. Don't quote me on this, but I believe it's only her second film. And you know what her first film was? Her first entry into the movie industry.
National
you should
Lampoons,
know this.
National Lampoons.
No. You would know this, though, because you love this movie.
Which one?
2010, the year we made contact. She plays the Russian astronaut.
No.
Where she's arguing with Roy Scheider, where he's trying to, you know, he's trying to show her how they can get the fuel from the one ship to the other ship and they can take off. And she says, I cannot.
She was way too young to be in that.
I cannot disobey my subordinates for no reason. And he says, forget reason. There was, I have no time to be reasonable.
What? I'm so confused right now. I gotta look this up. Seriously?
Yes, you remember 2010? That was
I saw it at the movie theater.
I was gonna say you loved that movie.
I did. It's so funny that movie, 2010, the year we made contact. I had the hardest time getting people to actually watch that movie.
Yeah,
well, and I don't know if it was because it was too long or what, but I was like, man, I loved it.
I think there were a lot of critics to, well, it's not 2001. It's not as good as Kubrick's 2001. Well, it's a sequel that doesn't live up. Well, if we're going to start counting sequels that don't live up to the original, we might as well make this a 9-hour show. But I liked it. I thought it was good. Peter Hyams directed that one. I mean, again, as we do for anyone that's listening, we always get off topic and start talking off in tangents.
I just realized who you said. Yeah, I'm in it.
Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Who did you think I said? Martha Plimpton?
Yeah. That's what I thought you said. I'm like, wait, what?
Yes, then I agree with you. She would have been too young. She would have been way too young.
I'm not an idiot. Okay, I'm going to leave all that in just to prove how smart you are and how dumb I am. This is why you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome.
But yeah, Helen Mirren. So, and you know, a strong-willed role in 2010, and then she follows it up with an absolutely meek and weak role in Mosquito Coast. Mm-hmm. You know, she's such a strong female lead in 2010.
Yeah, you're right. So now, God, now that I know who you're talking about, yeah. And that was a brilliant, you know, yeah, she did. She had a great role in 2010.
You know, yeah, and again, I know we do this where we get off on tangents and we talk about movies that we're not supposed to be talking about. But anyone who hasn't seen 2010, yes, it's not Kubrick's 2001, but it's a great, to me, it's a worthy sequel.
It's a great sequel.
A lot of big names. John Lithgow's in it too. Like, there's a lot of big names.
Yeah.
And if you love 2001 and you understand its message, you will further appreciate 2010.
Do I have to edit all your burps?
Yeah, no, leave those in. Leave those in for context. So the thing with 2010 is a lot of people watched it either having never seen 2001,
yeah,
or having not understanding 2001.
So when I was a kid, and when did that come out? 84?
It had to have been 84. Yeah, 83, 84.
So when I saw that at the movie theater, I was 12. You know, 12 years old, and I had never seen 2001 at the time, so I later saw it.
So you really had no idea about what was going on, right, with the monolith and all that stuff?
I was like, oh, this is different, you know? I was just a kid. But as a kid, you know, at my age, I think the same year or right around then, The Day After came out, so I was freaked out about nuclear war.
Oh, right.
You know, and that was the, in a lot of the pop culture at the time, movies and stuff like that, you know, War Games came out right around, or a year or two before that, maybe. And so, yeah, that whole theme of like this space. Anyway, we're getting way off. So, but I was totally into it. I was totally into it. So, yeah. So that's your free one, I guess, for this podcast. Go see 2010.
Oh yeah, go see. Yeah, there's my. You'll see when we do these audio podcasts that there's always a recommendation for like five other movies that we'll talk about. They have nothing to do with what we started with, but yeah, 2010 is something that I thought about when you mentioned Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's you know, all those interesting side notes about Martha Plimpton and Helen Mirren, and this is Harrison Ford's favorite performance, and you know, and it just goes to show. People have often asked people. I remember Denzel Washington got asked in an interview, "Is it more fun to play the bad guy?"
Mm.
You know, and a lot of actors, Denzel included, were like, "It doesn't matter." You know, playing a good guy is just as fun. It's all about trying to find, you know, the essence, the thing to go for. But you kind of really see delight, don't you, in some actors playing the bad guy or playing the jerk? They really sort of, you know, enjoy. Well, maybe it's not the enjoyment of being a jerk. It's the enjoyment of channeling a personality that is not theirs.
Mm.
You know, so it's for them, the joy is the challenge. You know, Harrison Ford comes off of had just come off Witness when he did Mosquito Coast.
Mm.
Witness, he is the most likable guy, the hero of the story. And his next film, he is a complete ass.
Yeah.
And, you know, but, you know, obviously he enjoyed it if he loved it that much, that performance. Yeah. Again, we don't want to talk too much about Minari because it's so new, so people have to go see it. But if you're getting anything from this episode, it's that, yes, go see The Mosquito Coast. See Minari. There's a lot of similar themes. Great performances all around. You know, again, Oscar winning performances.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a touching film. And Mosquito Coast isn't as touching. It's a little bit more brutal.
Yeah.
It has a brutal ending. Which, one more thing on the ending. I know we talked the missionary, the Reverend shoots Allie. He does die. I'm sorry to ruin that for anyone who, you know, hasn't seen a 1986 movie, and this is 2021. But interestingly enough, we talked about Helen Mirren's character of Mother. She never, ever in the film lied to her husband until the very last thing she ever says to him. The last spoken words. Well, you could argue that River Phoenix's narration is the last spoken words. But as far as, you know, actors speaking to each other, dialogue on screen, he asks her, "We're still going upriver, right?" And right before he dies. And she says, "Yes." And it's the only time in the film she lies to her husband.
Right. She knew he was dying, though.
She knew he was dying. So you could argue, oh, well, she was just trying to make him feel good, you know, because the next shot is them clearly going downriver to the ocean.
To the ocean, yeah.
Right. So you could say, well, she just did that because he was dying and she, you know, she wanted to make him feel okay on his way out. Okay, fine. But to me, as a screenwriter, there's always an ambiguous, there's always an underlying theme. And what were we talking about the pollution of paradise?
Right. Yep.
One last thing she never did before was lie to her husband.
And she was such a golden heart throughout the film. Then it ends with her lying.
It ends with her looking in his face, in his dying face, and lying to him on his way out. Wow. So, you know, to me, that's the kind of shit I read into. I'm like,
That's a good observation. That's good.
Pollution of paradise again.
Well, let's transition to 6 degrees. I don't know how long we've been going.
Oh, I totally forgot about 6 degrees.
40 minutes. You're going to have to wing this one. How are you going to do it?
Yeah, because we were for anyone that doesn't know, we moved the time up on this one and we kind of rushed it.
So we're going to see if you can do it on the spot.
Who did you want?
I said River Phoenix.
Right.
And the boy in Minari, Alan Kim.
Oh, it's
Kim.
The boy. Yeah. Alan Kim. Right, right, right. When I first saw your text, I was like, I forget who Alan Kim is because
I know.
It's been a while since I watched Minari. It's been a couple of months.
He's a pretty new actor, I would say.
Yeah, I think he's going to be around for a while. He really kind of nailed it.
He did.
He was really, really good in that movie.
Yeah. And can we talk about how cute those two kids were? Oh, my gosh. They're just adorable.
Which ones?
In Minari.
I thought you were talking about the twins in Mosquito Coast, who had very little lines at all.
Very few lines.
But okay, so Alan Kim and who? River Phoenix?
River Phoenix, yeah.
Oh, man. We might take up the rest of the time here with this one, but let's just... obviously Minari's got to be a connection, because I don't know any other movies Alan Kim was in.
Right.
I think this might have been his only movie so far, so definitely we're going to go with that. And if I had to pick a name, like, I can't use Steven Yeun, because we don't use TV shows, and The Walking Dead would have been a great sort of, you know...
Right.
Platform to use to branch off to other actors, but we have rules on this show. Our 6 degrees is we don't use directors unless they're in a film, and we don't use TV shows. They have to be in feature length films, so we can't use Steven Yeun. I mean, I'm sure he's been in movies. I just don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of one. So I would go with Will Patton.
That's who I thought you were going to go with.
Yeah,
I mean,
because
just,
Will Patton's been around. He's been in a ton of stuff.
I mean, I know him best from Armageddon.
Right.
Because I've
seen
that movie so many times. I love that movie.
But I would think, you know, and again, this I have no time to prepare, so it probably can be done in like 2 or 3, but I'm just going to wing this one. Will Patton was in, let's go Remember the Titans, because Denzel was in Remember the Titans, and that gives me an even bigger window now. Now I got Denzel in my bag of tricks.
Armageddon, you got Bruce Willis. And
that's true.
Good Lord.
True.
You got a whole
Bruce
bunch of actors in that
was
one. Ben Affleck.
Bruce and Ben Affleck in anything that
Harrison Ford,
River Phoenix had been in or close to being in. But I know that Denzel was in. I got it.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it. I don't know how many this is going to be.
Right,
but Denzel was in Cry Freedom with Kevin Klein. That was an Oscar nominated movie in the 80s. Boy, we should do that one sometime. That's a really good movie, Cry Freedom. Kevin Klein and Denzel, and then Kevin Klein was in I Love You to Death with River Phoenix.
No.
God. Yes.
How many is that?
I Love You to Death, there's one, and then Cry Freedom, and then Remember the Titans, and then Minari. That's four. That's not bad.
That's respectable.
Yeah, that's respectable.
And like you said, it's probably less, right? But this is
literally off the cuff. If I really wanted to pull out IMDb, we could probably nail this thing down to 2 or 3. but off the top of my head, I'll go with that. I'll go with those four. Now, you said Bruce Willis in Armageddon is probably a really good catch. You could probably do it in less.
Yeah.
It could probably be done in less. But I'm going to go with four. I'm going to go with my Denzel and go with four. But again, that's the key, is you got to find that one person that opens your window up.
Right.
Right. And Alan Kim himself, nothing.
But so he was just TV before this?
Who? The kid, the boy.
The kid, sorry.
Yeah, I think this was his only movie.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But Steven Yeun, who plays the dad, who plays Jacob.
Yeah, he's the one, yeah.
I've watched him all those years he was on The Walking Dead. I love that show. Right. And that has a lot of window opportunities because there's a lot of people that have come through that show. But again, I don't use TV shows like those Kevin Bacon guys.
Yeah. So like on IMDb, the kid has, as an actor, he's got 2 credits, but one isn't even out yet.
Oh, well, how about that? So Minari was his only movie.
First one, yep.
There's yeah, that was our...
It's just a movie that has been announced. It doesn't even have a release date. It's called Latchkey Kids. He's going to be in.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it'll probably be up for all the awards next year.
Yeah. So I'll go with those 4.
Good. Well done.
Yeah, that's fun. And again, anyone that's listening, I know we take up too much time going over the rules every week. So when we actually come up with a website, we'll state the rules on the webpage so we don't have to say them every week and waste time. But for anyone that doesn't know, it's the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, but only we call it 6 degrees of separation. And it's the argument is that find me 2 actors that cannot be connected within 6 degrees, a degree being a feature length film.
Right. No TV shows.
Right. The 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon guys, which I'll give them credit. I'm not trying to blast them. I'll give them credit for starting this whole thing. Yeah. But really, my argument was that it's not just Kevin Bacon, that you can do it with anybody. Yeah. Any 2 can be connected. That's my hypothesis, that any 2 can be connected, and you have to use, and they use TV shows, they use directors. I don't use none of that stuff. I just feature length films. If you appeared in a feature length film, so you can use a director, for instance, Martin Scorsese was in Quiz Show. He was an actor. He played a part. He was in Taxi Driver. Right. He played a part. Wow, boy, his part in Taxi Driver. Oh, if you haven't seen, that's a rough scene. You can YouTube that one. That was just filled with the language that you could never put in a movie today. Let's just put it that way. So anyone that wants to YouTube Martin Scorsese in Taxi Driver, his one scene, it's pretty bad. But anyway, we will use directors if they're actually in a movie.
Yeah.
But so, if they're, yeah.
I was just going to finish off by saying to our listeners, hopefully you notice that the quality of these audio productions are getting better.
They will continue to.
And they're going to continue to get better. We're trying to figure this out when we were just getting going, and we're still trying to figure it out. So we couldn't even get our video to work today, 20 minutes in. But we're working on, so by the time anyone hears this, we'll most likely have a website and all that, because we're going to get a few in the can here and then start putting them out there. We'll have a little rhythm going. Hopefully this first season, we're going to call this season 1. I suspect season 1 will be wrapped up sometime in 2021. And then when we start season 2, we'll have a little more experience and a little rhythm to what we're doing.
Maybe I'll actually have a studio.
Yeah.
I don't have a studio right now. And doing some of this stuff in the closet. I'm doing some of it. I'm trying to find the best audio room to do it in. So it's
I'm up in my attic, and it's like 85 degrees out and humid. And we have air conditioning, but the attic just does not cool down. So
yes, for anyone else that doesn't know, my brother and I are doing this 3 hours apart. He lives in Michigan, and I live in California.
Right. I shouldn't complain about the heat, though. You've had some freaky heat this past week or two. Right. Wasn't it like 108 degrees the other day?
Last week we're in the nice cozy 90s right now.
Okay.
The nice, what I would call the chilly 90s, because last week we're all hundreds. It was 111, 108, 113. So.
But it's a dry heat, right?
Yeah, it's a dry heat.
All right. Well, let's wrap this one up.
All right.
Well, that does it for this episode of the Silver Screen Happy Hour. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what movies you'd like to hear us discuss and review. We'd also like to hear your Stump Jerome 6 Degrees feedback and questions. You can find us on Instagram at Silver Screen Happy Hour, and you can email us at silverscreenhappyhour@gmail.com. Again, thanks for listening, and until next time, I'm Chris Wiegand.